We're holding on Samaches Amr Aleph, about a third of the way down the Amud, the line begins Psukah. We learned yesterday about kudiyokos, which we said is a condition that affects somebody who drank a lot of new unfermented wine, and the Gemara had identified it as a kind of shed that attacks. That kudiyokos is the name of a shed that attacks a person who did that. So now, having talked about the remedy for it and then digressed to tell a couple of stories in that connection, now the Gemara is going to talk something more about Shadim and tell the famous story of Shlomo HaMelech and Ashmedai in that connection. Starting with a pasuk in Kehelas, Shlomo HaMelech wrote Sefer Kehelas, and in it he describes, among other things, early on, he describes all the tremendous things that he accomplished in all the wealth that he accumulated and all the things that he did, and then he uses that as a springboard to talk about throughout the rest of the Sefer. So what exactly is the purpose of life? Is it just to acquire a lot of material wealth, or is there something higher? And of course, he comes to the conclusion, as you have at the end of Kehelas, that's the important thing. Anyway, so he mentions there in a pasuk, he says, "Asisi li shorim v'shorais." I made for myself, I prepared for myself male and female singers, which can mean the actual singers themselves. In other words, he had different groups of singers for himself and for his wives and whatever. It can also mean different musical instruments, some of which there are some musical instruments that women more typically play and others that men. Anyway, v'tanugas bnei ha'adam, and he continues, I prepared and I made for myself all the different kinds of enjoyments of people. Shida v'shidais. I had shida and shidais. So what are those? So shorim v'shorais elimine exemer. So this refers to different kinds of music. So again, it can mean different voice. It can mean choirs with different voices, male and female. It can mean musical instruments, some of which are higher pitched and some are lower pitched, resembling male and female voices. And it can mean instruments that are more typically played by men versus by women. Anyway. V'tanugas bnei ha'adam, when he continues the pleasures of people, that means elu breichas mechatzos. That means that he said that he made for himself baths and swimming pools and bathhouses and things like that that people can enjoy themselves in. Shida v'shidos. Now, what are shida and shidos? So hocha here in Bavel Targum, they translated shida v'shidosin, that it means a male shed and a female shed, which the Gemara is now going to tell the story in a minute of what Shlomo did with them. But Ma'arova Amri in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they said Shidsa, it means a Meloshin Shida, as in Shida Tevo Migdo, which means a carriage, which means carriages. For example, Rashi says that that women and noblemen and whatever ride around in such carriages. Ben Yehoyada makes an interesting point about it. He says, so what's so special about having a carriage? And he says that maybe the vort is that Shlomo actually had something like a car or a train or something like that that actually doesn't run, that actually runs by itself without having to be pulled by horses or whatever. And people saw it and it was traveling so fast that people thought that maybe it was being moved by Shadim, because how could a vehicle move that fast and seemingly without any external source of power? Anyway. So getting back to the idea of Shadim, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shlosh Meis Mine Shadim, Hoya B'Shichin, there were 300 types of Shadim in Shichin. The Gemara often uses 300 as just an indefinitely large number, so there's a lot of different kinds of Shadim over there. B'Shida Atzma, any Yadei Mahi, but yet with all of that, Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't know what a Shida itself is, so either he means that all there were over there in Shichin were the male ones, and so he has no idea what the female one is and what the difference is between it and the what the difference is in Ruchnius, that is, between one and the other. Or Rashi says the second, so one explanation is that I don't know what it is, and the second explanation is that the Shida, meaning the head, like the mother, so to speak, of all those 300 Shadim, I don't know what she is. So we see, in other words, that even people may be familiar to a certain extent with Shadim, male Shadim, but female Shadim less so. And Sifrei Kabbalah and Chassidus, it talks about more generally the idea that Shadim represent Koichas HaTumah, Yav and Tanya and Parachthes. For example, the Alter Rebbe talks about Yav Shadim Yehudoyin, Jewish Shadim, which is to say Tivus for things of Heter, and then you have non-Jewish Shadim, which embody Tivus of Isser. So here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that even within all that, you have male versus female ones, and to actually understand what the female one is and make sure to stay away from it is a lot harder. Okay, so so we said that in Bavel they explain that Shlomo's words are sicily shida that I made for myself shida v'shidois refers to shida v'shidsin, that it means a male and a female shed. Well, so even though Rabbi Yochanan is saying long afterwards, I don't know what a female shed is, I wouldn't be able to recognize one, but Shlomo had them. But the question is, what is he using them for? Especially, Marshall points out that actually, I mean, you're not even really supposed to, the Gemara tells, it's not as though he was using them like to ask them for things that are going to happen in the future or whatever. Shadim, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, are half human, half malach. So you could think maybe he's using them as like informants about what's going on in the Olam HaSelyon. But the fact is, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, you're not supposed to do that. So what would Shlomo have them for? So the answer is like this. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says about the building of the Beis HaMikdash, v'habayis b'hibonosei, when the Beis HaMikdash was being built, Eben Shlema Masa Nivneva Gomer, it was built of whole stones as they were moved, as they were quarried and moved from the quarry. And the Pasuk goes on to say that they didn't use hammers or any kind of iron tools like that when they were building the Beis HaMikdash. We learned in Sota, actually, we had a machloikas on the subject. Is it that no iron tools were used at all, and therefore, as we're going to say in the Gemara over here, he had to use the shomer on them, or is it that they were used but only off-site, on the site of the Beis HaMikdash, no iron tools were being used? Here apparently the Gemara is following the opinion that they didn't use iron tools at all, so they have to have some way then of carving the stones. So Amalehu l'Rabbanan Heichyevin. So he asks the Chachamim of his times, "What? How do I do it? If I can't cut them with iron tools, then how should I cut them to make to quarry and carve and hew stones for the Beis HaMikdash?" Omrulei. So the Chacham told him, "Ika Shemira. You have the Shomer worm." De'aisi Moshe la'avnei Ephod. Previously, Moshe, when he was building the Mishkan, used it for the stones of the Ephod, because, as we learned in Sota, the stones of the Ephod, and presumably also of the Choshen, although we'll talk about that in a second, those stones, they had the names of the Shvatim written on them, but you couldn't carve them with an iron tool, because the Pasuk says, b'miluaisam, they have to be complete. On the other hand, they can't be missing any of their substance. They also can't be just written on with ink, because the pasuk is pituchei choisam. They have to be carved like carving on a seal. So what they did is, we learned this in Sota, they wrote on them, they wrote the names with ink, and then they put the shamir on each of the places where it was written, and it would split open over there. The Gemara compares it, like, for example, the way that a fig, the juicy fig splits open in dry conditions without any of it being missing. So the same way over here, they did that. So that's available. So you should use that for the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. Tosfos mentions a discussion over here. So now, what about in the second Beis HaMikdash? Did they have the Shomer in the second Beis HaMikdash? And we talked about this at the end of Sota a little bit. Is it in fact that they had the Shomer in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash or not? Because after all, you have the story that took place in the second Beis HaMikdash where they lost one of the stones and they had to buy one from Dom ben Nissina for an enormous amount of money. So that implies that they still had the Shomer in those times, because otherwise they would have no way of writing the name on the new stone. On the other hand, Tosfos says that there seems to be a different Gemara that implies when it comes to the stones of the Mizbeach, that implies they didn't have the Shomer. And Tosfos says they may well have had the Shomer, but it doesn't make such smooth cuts. The Shomer will cut through stone, as we're saying over here in the Gemara, but it won't make a smooth cut the cut will be a little bit rough. So therefore, that's not going to work for the stones of their, that's not going to work for the stones of the Mizbeach, which have to be absolutely smooth. So therefore, even if they had the shomer at that time, they couldn't necessarily use it for that purpose. But there is a good deal of discussion among Rishonim about the ins and outs of that. Did they in fact have the shomer at that time, or did it disappear in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash? Did it disappear at the time of the end of the first Beis Hamikdash? The Ramban in fact says that you don't need the shomer for the stones of the Ephod, only for the stones of the Choshen. And they are the story in Kedushin with Dom ben Nisina, they lost one of the stones of the ephod. So not necessarily would they have needed the shomer. And maybe they didn't. Maybe the stones of the Choshen maybe can be done with iron tools, and therefore or maybe they still have the same stones from the first Beis Hamikdash. They still have in the second Beis Hamikdash. They got them back after Golus Bavel, and therefore they need only that. Anyway. Continuing in the Gemara over here, so now they tell Shlomo to build the first Beis Hamikdash, you need the Shomer. He says, where can I find it? They told him, I see Shidav Shidsin, Kavshinu Adadi. Bring a male and a female shed and press them one with the other, in other words, torture them, after the Yadi or Magaloch. They may know and they'll be able to tell you. Now, the Tosfos points out they didn't want to ask the Urim V'Tumim because the Urim V'Tumim is really only of last resort. Therefore, if there's an alternate way of finding out the information, they don't want to, so to speak, bother Hashem to give them the answer with the Urim V'Tumim. So I see Shidav Shidsin Kavshino Adodi. So sure enough, he took a male and a female shed and he was pressuring them and you're doing Yisurim to them to force them to reveal it. Amri, but they said, Anan lo yadin, and we ourselves, the regular run-of-the-mill Shadim, don't know the answer. Doma Ashmedai, Marker the Shidi Yoda. Maybe Ashmedai, the king of all the Shadim, maybe he knows. The Maharal has a long explanation about many different aspects of this Gemara. One thing he points out is that the Shomer is like something that it doesn't even belong in the human realm, Bechlal. So that's why the Chachamim to begin with thought that maybe the Shadim, who are kind of outside of that realm, know of it. And now they're telling him, you know what, that may be, but the one who's going to know about it is going to be Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim, not just your regular run-of-the-mill shed. So Shlomo asks him, where can I find him? Where is he? They said, Isib Turaplan. He lives on a certain mountain, and they name the mountain. They described he has a pit dug in the ground over there, Umayale Maya, which is full of water, or Mikasia Batinra, and it's covered with a rock, Bachasman Mikushpanke, and it's signed, it's sealed with his seal. So what he does is, so every day Ashmedai goes up to Shemayim and learns in the Yeshiva Shel Maila, because Ashmedai being the king of the Shadim, as we said before, all Shadim are half human, half Malach. Ashmedai is on a higher level among them. So he's on a high enough level to be able to be going up to Shemayim every day and learning from the Masivta Derekiah. Then at the end he comes back down to earth. So first he learns in Shemayim. Then he comes down to earth and learns in the yeshivas here on earth. So he has the best of both, kind of being half person, half malach. Then he does that. He has the ability to join in the yeshiva and in the discussions both in Shemayim and on earth. So he does all that, and after he's done all that, then he goes and checks his seal and makes sure that it's not broken, that nobody tampered with his water. Umagule, then he uncovers the pit, takes off the stone off it. Vishosi, and he drinks. Umachasile, and then when he's finished drinking, he covers it up again with the rock. Vachosimle, and he seals it. Vaozil, and he goes his way. So that's his daily routine. So now that Shlomo knows that, now he can use that routine against Ashmedai. And again, the Maharal. So first of all, Maharshal points out over here that the fact is, you know, again, the Gemara in Chagiga that mentions that Shadim are half human and half Malach. It mentions one of the things in which they're like humans. is that they eat and drink. So therefore, Ashmedai over here needs to drink just like any person. And the reason we're mentioning it again is because Shlomo is now going to use that against Ashmedai. The Maharal goes into a lot of symbolism about it. He explains that it means that Ashmedai gets hashpa milamayla, and it's represented by water in the sense that water is a very simple, uncomplicated drink, and it represents therefore that the human side of Ashmedai is like not a person or a regular person, is a composite. He's made up of many different elements, many different midas, and all that, as opposed to a malach or a shed, which in that sense is similar to a malach, has a much less complicated nature. He's more like one dimensional in terms of midas and whatever. So now, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, Shlomo replaced his water with wine, representing that now he's going to have him get ashpa more like a regular person does, a more compounded kind of thing, like the way wine is a compound of different kinds of tastes and aromas and whatnot, and that way he'll be able to get him. Anyway, so Shadri l'Benayahu ben Yehoyada. So Shlomo sent Benayahu ben Yehoyada to do the job to capture Ashmedai. Marsha points out, very appropriate the name. Binayahu, hasn't it? The name Bona, hasn't it? The Shodesh Bona, which means to build, because through him the Beis Mikdash is going to be built, because through him we'll get the Shamir. And the names Binayahu and Yehoyada, so both his and his father's names contain the Shem Havaya, or most of Shem Havaya anyhow. And as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he had a ring and a chain, each with the name of Hashem on them. So the name fits what he's going to be sent with. Shlomo gave him a chain on which Hashem's name was engraved. The Izka said the Chokek al Hashem, and a ring on which Hashem's name is also engraved. So those things he'll need to use to control Ashmedai. Ugvovi da Amra. He also sent with him bundles of tufts of wool. Viziki de Chamra, and skins full of and wine skins, bags full of wine. So Benayahu goes, Ozal, he goes over there to this mountain. Kora Beira Mitatoi. Now how is he the problem that he has to deal with is how is he going to get, he needs to replace the wine, where he needs to replace the water with wine, as we're going to go on to say in the story, but how is he going to do that without tampering with Ashmedai's seal? And then if Ashmedai finds that the seal has been tampered with, he's not going to drink because he's going to be afraid that somebody poisoned his water or something. So the first thing he does is he digs a hole in the ground, mitatoi, downhill from Ashmedai's pit, v'shafinu l'maya. Then through that he empties out the water from the top pit. So he makes a bottom pit, and then he digs a channel over there so that all the water from the top pit will flow into the bottom one. Then he plugged the hole with the tufts of wool so that now when he pours the next thing into there, it won't leak out again. Then he went and dug a pit uphill of Ashmedai's pit. So now you have three pits over there, one in the middle that Ashmedai had, and one above and one below it that Benayahu had dug. He pours the wine into the top one, and it dribbles down into the bottom one, into the middle one, that is to say, the one that was Ashmedai's original pit. Vitaminhu, and then he closed up the holes. So then he closed up the holes and closed up the two pits that he had dug, so that Ashmedai wouldn't realize that there was something fishy going on over here. Solik Yosebi Ilona, and now that Ashmedai had done all that job, he went and sat in a tree. Ben Yehoyada points out that now in the story, as we go on, we're going to mention what he used the chain for, to chain up, to tie up Ashmedai. We're not going to actually mention in the story what he used the ring for. So he mentions a couple of possibilities. The ring may have been, first of all, to protect Benayahu, because after all, Ashmedai is still a very dainty. So actually, Marsha says that even after Ashmedai is chained up, still he's able to cause damage, as we're going to see in the continuation of the story. So Benayahu needs the ring in order to protect himself. That'll protect him against anything that Ashmedai might want to do to him. But Ben Yehoyada says also another point might be the ring is what gave uh, Benayahu's supernatural strength over here. I mean, here he has to dig. He has to all of a sudden go dig two gigantic holes and fill them up and all that. And that would take and a mountain, which is usually rocky, it would take usually a fair amount of time. And here he's doing it single-handedly. So the ring gave him the power to be able to do that. Again, you know, the Maharal goes with this whole symbolic explanation over here of what's going on, that that Benayahu is going to, so to speak, replace the hashpa that Ashmedai usually gets milamayla. He's going to replace it with something else by which he'll be able to control Ashmedai. So ki osa, when Ashmedai came back from the yeshivas in Shemayim and on earth, so as usual, Sire the Gushpanka checked the seal and found it still intact. Galye, he opened up the pit, but Ashkechei Chamra, he found this wine in there instead of water. Omar, he says, I don't know if I should be drinking this. Ksiv, you have a posik. Leitz hayayin hoima shecher. Wine is a letz. It makes a person casual and careless about things of kedusha. Hoima shecher, a shecher, which means strong wine or other strong drinks like that, makes a lot of noise. B'chol shoyga b'lo yechkam. And anybody who's too much into it, shoyga means, among others, that he's very busy with it and he's distracted by it, whatever. Lo yechkam is not going to become wise. So I don't know if it's a good idea to be drinking this wine. Uchtiv, and you have another pasuk later. This second pasuk is later on in Tanakh, but Tosfos points out here and in a few other places in Gemara that even long before the pasuk was actually said by the Navi, they knew about the content of the pasuk already. So here he quotes a pasuk from Hosea, who lived a few hundred years later. Znus v'yayin v'tirosh yikach lev. Znus and wine and tirosh, which is another word for wine, yikach lev, take away a person's heart. Take away a person's understanding. So both of those psukim show that it's not good to drink wine. So I don't know if it's a, so I shouldn't be drinking it. Lo ishti, so you didn't want to drink from it. Now Marashar explains he's not concerned. The whole concern he had until now, why he had it sealed and so forth, because somebody might poison it. So now he finds the seal is intact. It didn't occur to him, this possibility that Benayahu is going to be digging holes above and below it and whatever. So he figured, okay, it must be a nest, that somehow there's a nest that my water turned into wine. The fact is, it's wine, and it's not good to drink it. It's going to end up confusing me, and it's going to end up being no good for me. But Kitzochi, eventually he got thirsty. Lois Sagile, he couldn't stand it anymore. Ishti, so he drank from the wine. And in fact, on the side over here, it brings a girsa that he quoted another pasuk to rationalize it. After all, v'yayin yisamach levav enosh. So he rationalized that after all, drinking wine is not always such a bad thing. Anyway, Rava, he got drunk, the gunner, and he fell asleep. Now that he's asleep, Nochis Osa, now Benayahu came down from the tree, Shadabe Shushilta. He put the chain on him, Sasme, and he locked the chain. So he locked the chain in particular, Rashi says, around his neck, so that way he can't get his head out of it. So now he's stuck, now he's captured. Ki itar, when he woke up, had become a farzal. He said, all of a sudden, he's chained up, starting to struggle and try to break through the chain. Benayahu says to him, Shmod Moroch Aloch, the name of your master of Hashem is on you, because it's on the chain. Shmod Moroch Aloch, the name of Hashem is on the chain. So stop trying to struggle against it. You're in my hands now. Okay. So Ashmedai has no choice, of course. You know, he's going to listen. Benayahu has the power of Hashem on his side, so he's going to have to come along. Ki nokit leva osi. So as Benayahu is holding on to Ashmedai and traveling, and here is again where Ben Yehoyada says that the Ben Yehoyada, by the way, the famous Ben Ishchai from Baghdad, he named most if not all of his svarim after words from the pasuk that describe Benayahu Ben Yehoyada. So he has his sefer Ben Ishchai, which comes from that pasuk. He has a sefer called Benayahu. He has another sefer called Ben Yehoyada. Anyway. So he points out, like we said before, that this is why Benayahu has the ring over there, so that while they're going, Ashmedai can't harm. Anyway, so as he's going, Motadikla, they came to a palm tree, Chafbei Shadye Ashmedai rubbed against the palm tree and knocked it down. Like he wants to show how powerful he is, and Bechlal, Shadim are destructive creatures. So therefore, it's kind of a natural thing for him to do, to want to do. The Maharal makes a point, especially a palm tree is like a very tall, outstanding thing. So therefore, like a shed is particularly drawn to go and attack such a thing. Motalabesa Shadye, similarly, he came to a house and he knocked it down. Then he came to the hut of a certain widow, and he was going to knock it down as well. But the widow came out of the house and of the hut and started pleading with him not to knock it down. So Ashmedai turned himself to a different side. Rashi explains, particularly kofa means literally he bent. So like you have the width of his shoulders are by the house, and he was about to knock it down, and now he's turning to go in a different direction. Itbar be garma, and as he was doing that, a bone in his body broke. Omar, so he says, now I understand the Pasuk in Mishlei, the Loshen Raka to Shabbat Gorim, a soft tongue breaks a bone, because in this case, the soft tongue of the Amona caused me to turn too quickly and to break a bone. It all represents Beruchnius that even Koyach HaTumah over there is not going to attack somebody or that is very low down like this Almana, and on the contrary, she's able to exercise a certain degree of control over him. Anyway, continues the story. Ashmedai saw a blind person was wandering on the road and he didn't know the way. And Ashmedai got him back on the right path, which seemed like a bit of an unusual thing for him to do, because it shade him are usually destructive creatures. So they, and in fact, later on in the story, Benayahu Ben Yehoyada asks Ashmedai why he did that. Then Chozir Rav did have a Katoi Baruch. Then further along, he saw a blind person. A drunk person. So first he saw a blind person and got him back on the straight road. Then he saw a drunk person, Dav Katoi Baruch, who was also blundering on the road. Askir La'urche, and again, Ashmedai put him back on the right road. Chozir Chedvosa to have a Kamachadila. They're going further. They see a wedding. Chadvasa literally means a simcha, but it means, Rashi says, particularly, it means a wedding where they were very, very happy. Bacha, and he was crying. Again, what is he crying? Is it that he has it? He doesn't like it when people are happy? Again, we'll see later on. He'll explain it all to Benayahu. Shamilahu Gavra, to have a Ka'amala Ushkafa, he overhears a certain person saying to a shoemaker, Ovidli Masoni Lashev Shni, make me shoes that will last me for 7 years. Achich, and when Ashmedai heard that, he started laughing. Chozahu Ksama Dab Kosim, he saw a magician who was doing his magic, Achich, and he laughed at him also. Why he did all those things, again, he'll explain further down on the Amud why he was crying and laughing and whatever at these various things. Eventually, when they reached Shlomo's palace, they didn't bring him before Shlomo for 3 days. You would say, in other words, Shlomo wants to show Ashmedai who's boss, that you may be the king of the Shadim, but I'm greater than you, and therefore I can make you wait for me. Again, the Maharal talks about an idea that 3 days represents like a complete separation between one thing and another, and therefore since Ashmedai is like not from the human realm, then therefore there needs to be a 3-day waiting period before he and Shlomo can get together. So the first day, Ashmedai asks the people of Benayahu and whoever else was guarding him, why isn't the king calling me for an audience? So they told him an excuse. He drank too much, and now he drank too much wine or whatever, and now he's feeling the effect of it. He answered with a gesture. Shaka levain to mechavra. Ashmedai took one brick on the ground over there and put it on top of another brick in response to what they said. So they came, told Shlomo that Ashmedai had done that. Amalahu. So he says to them, Hochi Amalahu, by that, Ashmedai is signaling to you, Hodr Ashkiua, give him more to drink, and that'll help get rid of the bad effects of the wine. A person has a hangover, sometimes they have a little bit of the same drink, and it helps them. So in effect, Ashmedai is hinting at the same thing with his pantomime with the bricks. Lemocher Omelahu, the next day, Ashmedai again, Shlomo is still not calling them in. So the next day he asks, so now today, why isn't Shlomo calling me in for an audience? Omrele Ansi Emecha. And today they say, because he ate too much. So this time Ashmedai responded by taking one brick off the other one and putting it on the ground. Also, Amalei l'Shloima, so they came and told Shloima, and Shloima understood what he's hinting at. Amalehu, Hochi, Amalehu. Ashmedai is hinting by that to you. Negidu minei mechle, take away his food from him. Just give him a little bit of food afterwards. Eventually Shloima is out of excuses, and eventually, like Maharal said, 3 days is enough of a waiting period. Anyway, l'soif t'losi yomi ayah l'kameh. Finally, at the end, on the third day, then Ashmedai is brought before Shloima. Now, you have to realize, in this whole story, Ashmedai doesn't know yet why Shlomo even had him captured and brought to him in the first place. As far as he's concerned, it's just that Shlomo is a big shot and wants to show that he rules even over the king of the Shadi. So Shoko Kanya, he took a stick, Umoshach Arbar Gamidi, and measured out on the ground 4 amas, V'shodr Kameh, and then he threw down the stick in front of Shlomo. Omalei, he says, Mechdi, let's consider. Ki ma'isahu gavra, when that person, meaning you, dies, lesle b'hadein alma el arbar gamidi, all you have in this world is 4 amos. In other words, eventually a person dies and is buried, and whether you're a shloim amalach or whether you're a poshut person, either way, you got the same 4 amos of burial space. So what are you looking so much for worlds to conquer in this world? Hashta kvashta the kula alma. You've already conquered the entire earthly world. And you're still not satisfied until you also captured and control me as well. So Shlomo says, no, it's not that I need anything from you. But I need to build the Beis HaMikdash for Kabumbari Le Shamira. And I need the Shamir, and I'm told that you know where it is. So Ashmedai answers, I do know where it is. However, it wasn't given to me. However, it was given over to the Sar, the Malach of the Yam. The Maharal explains that the Shomer being a worm is more like one of those types of creatures that comes from the water and is more associated with it. And therefore, appropriately, it's given over to the Sar Shoyam. Actually, Marsha says that first. He says, "Gidulei b'mayim." This creature maybe grows in water, so therefore, it was given to the Sar Shoyam. But he continues, the Sar Shoyam himself doesn't hold on to the Shomer. The only one that the Sar Shoyam will trust the Shomer with is the wild chicken. Specifically, this is a type of creature called in Lashon Kodesh Duchifas. It's listed among the non-kosher birds in Parshas Shemini. And in Parshas Re'eh, there's one of the last ones on the list over there is Vesad Duchifas, which is this bird that we're talking about over here. In English, it's called a hoopoe. So the Sar Shoyam gives the Shomer only to that creature. De Mehemen Layashavuase, where he knows that he can trust the town of Golambo. He knows that he can trust this hoopoe with his shavua that he will return it when necessary. So Shloima asked to my Ovid Bey, so what does the town of Golambo do with this worm? So he answers, Mamtile the Ture de Lesbahu Yeshuv, the town of Golambo takes the Shomer to mountains where nothing grows. He places it on the peak of the mountain. Shina the Torah actually literally means the truth of the mountain. So it means the top. However, there's a Rashi elsewhere who translates that translates Shina the Torah actually as the bottom of the mountain. Whatever it is, the point is he puts the worm over there. That causes the mountain to split open because that's what the Shomer does. It splits open rocks. Umankit Maisi Bizarni Me'iloni. Now the town of Golabur goes and brings seeds from trees. Vishodi Hossam, and he puts them over there on the ground. Vahava Yishuv, and eventually trees start growing over there, and you become a settled area where there is available what to eat. There's available what to eat, and it can now become a cultivated area. The Maharal makes a point over here. He says that it's given to the Sarshol Yam, where the Yam is completely outside of human habitation, because people live only on dry land. But on the other hand, he gives it to the town of Golabur and the town of Golabur uses it in order to enhance civilization by making more areas that previously were uninhabitable, that he makes them that now they're habitable, and they have trees and all in them. Anyway, the Gemara points out behind Dimitagamin and Nago Torah. This point that the town of Golabur does this kind of thing with the Shamir is why in Targum Onkelos on the Pasuk over there, when it says Vesa Duchifas, he translates the word Duchifas as Nagotura, the carver of the mountains, because now we understand, because that's what he's doing. He carves the mountains and makes them into places where things will grow. And Marsha points out, this is why the Sarshol Yam will trust only the town of Golabur with it. The town of Golabur, he knows he can trust with his Shavua that he won't, not only that he'll return it when he needs to, but also that he won't use it for destructive purposes. If people have access to such a thing, they're going to use it for all kinds of destructive purposes. Okay. So now that Shlomo knows where the Shamir is to be found, so they went and they found the nest of a town of Golabur that has babies in it. Here it doesn't say that Benayo was involved necessarily. It could be that Shlomo sent somebody else. Anyway, so whoever it was that he sent covered the nest with a piece of clear glass. Kiosa. So now this is he waited, in other words, until the parent town of Golabur is away with the Shamir doing its work. So now when it comes back to the nest, the point is, in other words, it actually says clear glass, that way it can see its babies through the nest, but it's gonna need the Shamir to break through because it can't get through. So when the town of Golabur comes back to the nest, Boil Mayal, he wants to go in, but he can't because the glass is blocking him. Also, I see Shamir of Ilave. So he went and took, he brought the Shamir from where he had it before and put it on top of the glass to break it. Rama Beikola, the person that Shlomo had sent, started yelling with a loud voice at the bird. And that startled it. Shadye, so it dropped it. Shakle also. So now Shlomo as a messenger is able to take the Shomer. Ozal belongs to the next sentence. Ozal Chonak Nafshe Ashvuase, the town of Golabur was so upset that he had broken his shvua, that he promised the Shomer that he'll promise the Sarshol Yam that he'll take care of the Shomer, and now he had violated it. Chonak Nafshe Ashvuase, he strangled himself because of his shvua, because he hadn't kept his shvua. And Marsha adds, not only that, he's also concerned now that people have the Shamir, who knows what kind of destructive things they're going to do with it. Well, of course, they're not going to use it for destructive purposes. Shlomo now has it available, and he built the Bais HaMikdash with it. So now, Amalei Bnei Yahu, asks Ashmedai. So Ashmedai still, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, stayed around. Shlomo didn't release him, even after he had the information from him that he needed. So now Bnei Yahu has a chance to talk to Ashmedai and find out the answers to the things that went on the trip. My time of Kichazis Yalahu Samir to have a Katoi Ba'urcha. Why is it when you saw that blind person was blundering on the road, Asikde La'urcha, you put him back on the right road? And the point is, in other words, he doesn't ask him about knocking down the tree and the house, because he understands that Shadim are usually, Marsha explains, he understands that Shadim are by nature dangerous creatures. It's kind of a natural thing that they're going to go and knock things down. But on the other hand, to go and help people seems to be opposite of what you do. So why'd you do that? Ashmedai answers, they announced about this person in Shemayim that he's a tzaddik gomer, umand ovid le nicha nafshe. So anybody who helps him out, makes him feel good, zochel alma da'asi, will be zoicha to olam haba. So therefore, so Ashmedai is saying, I wanted that schar. After all, Ashmedai, we said, is half person, half malach. So he knows the importance of olam haba, and he wants to have that his half human side should have a share in olam haba. Okay, Benayohu asks him, my time of kichazisi lahu rav yedekatoi baruch. What about you saw that drunk person was also wandering on the road and didn't know the way? Asikte la'urche, and you put him back on the straight road. Was he also a great tzaddik? Omalei, so Ashmedai says just the opposite. Machrizei alei berakia, the Rosh HaGomer. They announced in Shemayim that this guy is a complete Rosh. So I did one good thing for him. This way he'll use up his schar in this world, and therefore there's nothing left that Hashem is going to have to pay him back in the next world. Then Ashmedai asks him, "My time kichazisi lahu chadvasa b'bayis." Bochis, why is it when you saw the wedding you cried? Is it that you have something against people being happy? This is how Marsha explains the point of the question. So he answers, Omalei, boy, he says, no, because I can see the future. Boy, Mamus Gavra, begoy Tlosin Yoimin, within 30 days, that Chosin is going to pass away, so leaving his wife and Almana, and even worse, Boy, Minto, the Yovim Kotten, Tlosin Shin. Shnin, she's going to have to wait 13 years for a Yovim who's now a Kotten. Meaning, in other words, this Chosin is, now they're having a wedding, and everybody is very, very happy. But when this chosid passes away, obviously he and his wife won't have children yet. So therefore, his wife is going to need yibum. And who is the chosid only has one brother who's right now a baby. And as we learned in Yavama, so a child can't do chalitza, and even yibum, he's not really supposed to do until, even yibum, he can't really fully do until he's bar mitzvah. So she's going to have to wait for him 13 years until he's old enough to be able to do chalitza for her to be able to marry somebody else. So therefore he's saying, I can foretell that future, and therefore I'm sad that she's going to have to go through that in life. Next, Benayohu asks him, "My time at Kishmaite Lahu Gavra, the Amale the Ushkafa, Vidli Misoni Leshev Shnin. Why is it when you heard that guy says to the shoemaker, make me shoes that will last me 7 years, Ach Achichas, you laughed? Omalei, so Ashmedai answers, How Ushiva Yoima Lesle? That guy who put the order in doesn't even have 7 days left to live. Misoni Leshev Shnin, boy, why does he even need shoes that are going to last him 7 years? Actually, Rashi says doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to die within 7 days. Rashi just says he can't even be sure that he's going to live 7 days, and he's asking for shoes for 7 years. So in other words, Ashmedai is saying, if people realize such things like this, this guy is apparently very much into things of Olam Hazeh, and he thinks he wants shoes that are going to last him so long. But he should realize that Olam Hazeh is not really the main thing. You get shoes, okay? So then when they wear out, you get another pair. You don't have to be talking about as though I need something for 7 years when you don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. There is an interesting thing in this connection, by the way. In Sefer Chassidim, it says that you shouldn't wear shoes that belong to a person who passed away. This is tackle why when a person passes away, they throw out his shoes. So we see this Gemara gives a certain support for it, because otherwise, so what? The guy's not going to live for 7 days. So what? The guy may die tomorrow or within the next 7 days. Somebody else could always take the shoes and continue wearing them, but we see that you shouldn't do that. Anyway, Benayohu asks him, "My time of kichazisi lahu kasama davakosim achichas? Why, when you saw that magician doing his magic, were you laughing?" Omalei, so Ashman answers, "Dava Yosef, a big Gaza de Malka. He's sitting right on top of a place in the ground where underground there's buried a huge king's treasure. Lixim my de Ikaturse. If he's going to be doing magic, if he's going to claim that he has magical powers, then he should be able to see what's under his own feet and dig it up. So therefore, he doesn't even realize that. So I was laughing. I was laughing that people are so silly that this guy, in other words, he thinks he presents himself as a great magician and doesn't even know what's under his own feet. The Gemara continues. The story continues. Tarche Gabe. So Shlomo kept Ashmedai by him ad banya the Bismikdash until he had built the Bismikdash. doesn't say why, but preposterous, I guess you could say, because Shlomo figured in case he needs other help from Shadim in building the Bismikdash, and this way he'll have Ashmedai available to command Shadim to do the job for him. Anyway, so during that time, Yom Echad have a koil chode. One day, Shlomo and Ashmedai were standing together one-on-one. There was nobody else with them. And now we're going to have, in the continuation of the story over here, we're going to have how Shlomo was punished and kicked off the throne by Ashmedai. There are other places where it says, here the Gemara doesn't bring it, but there are other places in Midrashim where it says that this is a result of, we know that Shlomo had violated the mitzvahs that apply to a king. He's not supposed to have more than a certain number of wives, and Shlomo had gone beyond that. He's not supposed to have too many horses, and he went beyond that, gold and silver. So he deserved to be punished, and now the continuation of the story is he ended up getting this punishment through Ashmedai. So Omale, so Shlomo asks Ashmedai, let me ask you a question. In one of Bilam's brachas to the Jewish people, he praises Hashem. He says Hashem has kisoyafos and re'im, which means, so the simple meaning of kisoyafos re'im means like the flying high thing of the re'im. It means the tall horn of the re'im. But Marsha points out the problem that Shlomo had with it. The word kisoyafos comes from the word oif, which means flying. So what does that have to do with the re'im? So therefore, so he understands that it means that Hashem has toyafos and re'im that he has available to send. And when he needs to punish people, then he can send the toyafos or re'im for the purpose. So v'amrinam. And we say to explain that possibly, that it means Hashem has at his disposal when he needs to punish people, he has malachi ashores, which are represented by kisoyafos because they fly, and they also have re'im, which are the shading, which implies, just like the re'im is a very big, powerful creature, that implies that shadim have greater power than regular people. So he asks, what is your advantage over us? You Shadim, who are half human, half malach, in what way is your strength greater than human beings' strength? Omale, so Ashmedai answers, Shkel shol shilta minai, take the chain off me, Bahavli iskasach, and give me your ring, that Hashem's name is written on it, the one that he had given before to Menayahu, and then I'll show you my greatness and my power. So if Shlomo had been thinking clearly, he wouldn't do that because an unchained Ashmedai is a very dangerous one. But again, because of the Averis that he had done, because of the fact that he had violated these mitzvahs of the king, so Hashem prevented him from realizing that. So sure enough, Shakri l'shushulta minei v'yahav l'iskasei, he took the chain off Ashmedai and gave him the ring. And the bale, Ashmedai, swallowed up Shlomo. He stretched out one wing towards the heaven and the other on the earth, and he spit out Shlomo and threw him 400 parasa away. And now Shlomo is gone from there. 400 parasa is like 900 miles or so. So he's far, far away from there. So Marsha brings over here from Targum Yonason on the Pasuk that this is because he had violated the mitzvahs of Hashem is why he deserved this punishment. And the Maharal makes a point that 400 parasa represents like being completely separated from anything else. 400 parasa is like the largest defined area. That's why we have, for example, Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Mitzrayim are both described as 400 parasa. So Shlomo being thrown 400 parasa away represents that he's being completely removed from any semblance of the kingship that he had before. Allah, he shaita omer Shlomo. In fact, Shlomo says regarding that time in his life, he says the pasuk in Kehelas, "My yisrael ma'amola la'odem b'chol amola shi'yamol tachas hashemesh." What profit does a person have from all the work that he works under the sun? Which in all the gashmiyistic things that he accomplishes under the sun, where the Gemara explains in Shabbos that what's above the sun, meaning the Torah, a person does gain by it. But here Shlomo is saying, for all the gashmiyistic wealth and power and everything that I accumulated, what good does it do when I'm thrown off my throne like that? And he continues further on after the Pesukim where he describes all the great things he had accomplished as king. And by the way, he says in the Pesukim over there, Ani Kehelas Hayisi Melech, which the Gemara is going to quote soon, actually. So at the end, Perek Beis, after he lists all of the things that he accomplished, including the Pesuk that we started this sugya with, there's a pasuk over there, Al Sisi Li Tan Shorim Shores, etc. So he continues at the end. He says, "Vizeho Yechelki Mikol Amolim." This was my portion from all my effort. So my vizeh, what does it mean, vizeh? Whenever you have vizeh, whenever you have zeh, means that you're actually pointing to something. Rav and Shmuel argue what Shlomo, what was the one thing that Shlomo had left. One says that it means the walking stick that he had in his hand. And the other says all that he had left was gundai, which Rashi translates gundai as his lavush. And then he brings an explanation from Rav Chaim Goin that instead of gundai, the word is supposed to be kudai, which means the earthenware cup that he drank out of. And the Rambam gives a different explanation that kudai means a wooden cup. So whatever it is, the point is that's all he has left. The Maharal makes a point over here that he says that the makle represents its powers of ruchnius, because like a person in ruchnius is a mahalach who goes from one level to a higher level, and a person has a walking stick to help him with that. So therefore, the walking stick represents his mind, his ruchnius that he still had, and gundai would represent something that he has for his body. Following Rashi's explanation that gundai means a lavush, then it's something that his body, that he wears on his body. By the way, the Gemara in Sanhedrin uses the expression that eventually he was only molach al makloi or al gundai, that he only ruled, that the only thing he had to rule over was his makloi or his gundai. There's an interesting vote that it says on it, wrote from Rabbi Yitzchak Putner, I think, that says that the vote is even in this terrible state of his, whereas the Gemara is going to say now he had to go wandering around and begging for a living, he still felt a sense of malchus, even if the only thing he has to have malchus over is a stick or a garment. He still felt himself to be a melech. Anyway, so Shlomo is wandering around and going from one door to another, begging for tzedakah. Kol hecha demata, and wherever he went, Omar, he would say, kol hecha demata, wherever he was going, Omar, he would say, as it says in the pasuk, ani kahelas hayisi melech hayisrael b'yishalayim. I kahelas, which is a nickname for Shlomo, because it says at the beginning over there, he gathered together all the chochma in the world, kahelas melech and kohol, and also because when he gave droshes to the Jewish people, everybody was there b'hakel. Anyway, Hoyisi Melech, I was king of Yisrael, of Yerushalayim. I was king over the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. So I was, because right now I'm not, because right now I'm wandering around and begging. And everybody thought that he's a Meshuggah. He motor Gabi Sanhedrin. Eventually he reached in front of the Sanhedrin. Omer Rabbanan, the Chachamim of the Sanhedrin said, Mechti Shota b'chod milsa loisarech. Let's consider, a Shota never just repeats the same thing over and over again. A Shota just says various random things. This guy, the whole time, he's saying, Ani Kohela, so you see Melech, my high, what's going on over here? Maybe there's some truth to it. Omer lo the Bnei Yahu. So the first thing they did is ask Bnei Yahu. So now during this time, as we're going to see from the continuation of the story, Ashmedai is sitting on the throne and impersonating Shlomo. So they ask Bnei Yahu, Kaboy loch Malka l'gabei, has Shlomo recently called you in for an audience with him? Omer lahu lo. So he says no, because the obvious reason is because Ashmedai. Because Marashah says he's using all of Shlomo's other servants and all, but Bnei Yahu, who has a ring with Hashem's name on it, so Ashmedai is afraid, of course, that he might get in trouble if he has Bnei Yahu in front of him. So he doesn't call for him. This seems suspicious. So they sent a message to the Sanhedrin, to the queens, to Shlomo's wives. Ka'asi Malka l'gabaychu, has the king come recently to you? Shocholahu ein ka'asi. They said yes, he has come to us. Shocholahu. So the Chachamim sent back to them a message. Bidku b'kare, check his feet. The feet of Shadim look like chicken feet. There's an interesting word that it says on it. We know it says in Pirkei Avos, you have the different things that Hashem created Erev Shabbos Vein Hashmashes, and one of them, according to one opinion over there, was V'yeshayim Ma'afam Azikin. So the point is that according to that, the vote is that Hashem left this medrash that says that therefore Hashem left their feet uncompleted and made them just like chicken feet to represent for us that we should realize when you have Shabbos is coming, no matter how important your work is, you still set it aside and don't, even if that means leaving it incomplete. So therefore Hashem demonstrated that, so to speak, by leaving the shadim incomplete. Anyway, so check his feet and then you'll know. So the wives sent back a message. He always comes with us. He always comes to us wearing slippers or socks, so his feet are covered. Not only that, he's acting strangely. He's demanding to have relations with us even when we're nidus. He's even demanding to have relations with Bathsheba, his own mother. So now the Chachamim realize this is not Shlomo. This is Ashmedai disguising himself as Shlomo. Asyua the Shlomo. So they brought back Shlomo. So now they said, okay, now we understand that this that he was going around the whole time saying, Ani Shlomo Ha'isi Melech is the real deal. So they Vahovale Iskasov Shoshil to the Chokal Hashem. They gave him another ring and another chain that has Hashem's name, engraved on them. Ki Ayo, so when Shlomo came into the throne room carrying those things, Chazye, Ashmed, I saw him, Parach, and he flew off. Because he doesn't want to get chained up again. Nevertheless, from then on, Shlomo was always afraid of Ashmedai, that he might come and attack him. This is the pasuk says, "Hinei metosei shel Shlomo." Here is, behold, is the bed of Shlomo. Shishim giborim saviv lo, 60 mighty men all around it. Migibori Yisrael, from among the mighty men of Israel. Kulam achuz, you say this in Kriyas Shema Mita. Kulam achuz echerev, all of them are holding swords. Melum de mochama, all of them are trained in war. Ish chabay al yurecha, each one has a sword on his thigh. Mipachad by leilas, because of the fear at night. In other words, that now Shlomo has reason at night to be afraid that Ashmedai might come and get him, and therefore he has to have a guard. He has to have guards around his bed. So the Gemara finishes off. Rav Shmuel chad om a melech behed. Yet, so Rav and Shmuel disagree. What was the trajectory of Shlomo's career? One says Melech Behedyet. He started out being a king and then became a Hedyet, because then when Ashmedai kicked him off the throne, he became a Hedyet and remained like that. In other words, we would assume it means he remained like that the rest of his life. V'chadam a Melech Behedyet a Melech. The other one says he did come back to becoming a king. So Marushah says, I mean, it seems to be a little hard to understand. How could you say Melech Behedyet? I mean, the fact is, the Pasuk says that he ruled for 40 years and then he was buried with the other kings. Surely you're not going to say the years on which he was thrown off the throne and wandering around count towards his kingship. Based on Targum Yonason that we said before, that he was punished with all of this because he violated the mitzvahs. So maybe this taka happened towards his old age. Maybe taka, he ruled for 40 years and only then did the story happen that Ashmedai kicked him off the throne. There are other mephoroshim who explain that even between Rav and Shmuel, they're not saying he never came back to becoming a king, just that he was never a king of the same caliber. According to that opinion, he was never a king of the same caliber as before to be able to rule over the Shadim and to be able to everything that aspect of his malchus he lost and he never regained. So that's the end of that story. So now the Gemara had begun the perek after we talked about Kudiyokus, and the Gemara had mentioned the remedy for that. So then the Gemara mentioned the remedy for a couple of other things for being overheated or chilled, where some of them were similar to the ones for Kudiyokus, which is why the Gemara mentioned them. So now, having digressed to talk about Shadim, now the Gemara gets back to this matter of Refuas. And Marsha explains that the reason why the Gemara is going to now spend like a blot and a half or two blot or so discussing details of Refuas. Why? What's that doing in the Gemara? Why is that so important enough to be included in the Gemara? And he says, the vote is, there was a time when Chizkiyahu had to hide away the Sefer HaRefuas, which was a book that contained all the medicines and all the cures for everything in the world, because there were people who were relying too much on that and not realizing they have to rely on Hashem. But when the same way as the whole Torah Shabbat pad to be written down so that we don't forget it, the same way, Ravina and Ravashi realized these things have to be written down so people don't forget them, and therefore they wrote them in the Gemara, and it also demonstrates that there's no chokhmah that's missing from the Gemara. You shouldn't think that the Gemara is all about halacha and ruchni, and ruchniistic things and religious things like that, and then chokhmah of medicine is not in it. No, you should realize that the Chachamim also knew the chokhmah of medicine. With that said, as we talked about previous times, it's brought in Svarim, beginning from the times of the Rishonim and all, that we don't use these cures anymore, and we're not supposed to, because they may not work. We don't know all the ingredients exactly. We don't know. There may be other details that need to be done with them that are not mentioned here in the Gemara. Nishtanu ativim, people's natures have changed, and so forth. So we learn them to realize the chokhmah that there was in the Gemara, and because many of them have deeper meanings as well, but not to actually try them in practice. So the Gemara starts with L'dama d'resha. If a person is suffering from bleeding, if a person is suffering from blood in the head. So Rashi describes, in other words, that he has a headache because of the blood in his head. So what that, some kind of headache as a result of that. So lacy shuvina, you take shuvina, which is a type of cedar wood, ubina, and an arava, a piece of arava, but also dora, and a fresh hadas, fresh myrtle, vizesa, and an olive, or maybe it means an olive branch, vichilfa, and a chilfa, which is in Hebrew it's called tzatzifa. Rashi translates it as a piece from a poplar tree. You have in sukkah, you have over there that a tzatzifa is similar, it grows somewhat similarly to an arava, but the leaves are shaped differently and they're serrated, and the stem is white rather than an arava stem is red, and so forth, but it's a related species. So you take all that, b'chilfi diyama, and you take chilfi diyama, which is Rashi translates it as cloves. So you take all that, the yivla, and yivla, which is a type of herb, v'lish lakinu bahadi hadadi, and you cook all these things together. You have a soup like you made from all these ingredients. V'lintel tlasmeh kasia hai disideresha, or tlasmeh kasia hai disideresha, pour 300 cups on one side of the guy's head and 300 cups on the other side, and then that'll cure this headache. The eloy, if not, let's say you can't find all those ingredients, lacy vauda chivra de kori b'chad dara, then what you do is you take a white rose where the leaves grow only on one side of it, v'lishlake, and cook it, v'lintel shittin kasia hai gisidereisha, v'shittin kasia hai gisidereisha, and pour 60 cups of the mixture on one side of his head and 60 on the other side. So one or the other of these things. Next, l'tzlichsa, for a tzlichsa, which is a headache of half the head, which would be a migraine headache. So the previous one was the dama d'resha, as a headache caused by too much blood in the brain or something. This one is a migraine headache. So lacy tanagola bora, you take a tanagol habora, which is the creature that we mentioned earlier on the Amud that had the guardianship of the shomer, a hoopoo. The lishchete bezuza chibra, shecht it. Now it's a non-kosher bird. You don't really need to shecht it, but for purposes of this remedy, you do. You shecht it using a dinner made out of silver. So I guess you sharpen the edge of it and use it as a knife to shecht the bird. Ahahu gisid kayev lei, specifically shecht it over the side of the head that hurts. So if it's the right side of the head where he has the migraine, then you shecht the bird over the right side of his head, and the same thing with the left. V'nizdar midome, but you have to be careful where the blood goes, the little saminu la'ene, because it shouldn't blind him, because if the blood gets into the guy's head, then it could blind him. The litli of sefer debava. Then you take the carcass of this town of Galabur and hang it by the doorpost of the house. And you position it in such a way that the person rubs against it whenever he goes in and out of the door, and that'll cure the migraine and get rid of it. Next, the Gemara continues. For Barukti, which is Rashi says it's an eye condition. Rashi translates it with a French word, which means like a cataract or something. So Tosfos discusses over here. Here the Gemara is going to give a remedy for it, and yet elsewhere there's a Gemara that implies that there's no remedy for it. So Tosfos says two possibilities: either that Gemara in Bechoras, which talks about it among Mumin, if there's something that needs a remedy, it's still considered a Mum Kavua. Unless you apply that remedy, then it won't be. Or the other possibility is maybe we're talking about over here at the beginning of it, then it can still be cured. But there, the Gemara is talking about where it's been there chronically, long term, where there's no curing it. Anyway, so here we're talking about, as Tosfos is saying, either an early stage of it or whatever. Anyway, Lasi Akrava Deshev Chumri. Take a scorpion that has seven different colors on it. As scorpions get older, every year they get a new layer on top of them, a new layer of exoskeleton. So it's old. So it actually explains. Therefore, it has different colors on it. A different set is a sefer called Medr Sharifua that goes through a number of the things in the Gemara over here and explains them. So he explains that it means every year the akrav also grows a new growth ring on its tail, like the way rattlesnakes and other creatures do. So it means that it has seven growth rings on its tail. Either way, the point is it's quite a few years old. V'niyabshe betula, take that scorpion and dry it out in a shady place. Then you grind together two parts of coil, which is a powder that they use for eye shadow and also for an eye remedy. So two parts of that and one part of it, of the dried scorpion. Then you put in three droppers of it in one eye and three in the other eye. Rashi describes that a makhel could be, for example, the a feather of a bird or a long skinny spoon or whatever. So usually you would use it to apply chol to the eye. So here you use that to apply the stuff to the eye. But don't put any more than three drops of the mixture, not drops really, because it's a ground up powder. Don't put more than three applications of the powder in each eye. If you do poka'ene, then the eye may burst because you'll put in too much medicine and it'll be no good. Next, continues the Gemara, the Shabriri Delelia, when a person is suffering from night blindness, so in other words, he can't see well at night. Nasi Shudra Barka, what you should do is take a rope of animal hair. For example, Rashi describes you might take, for example, hair from the tail of a horse or a cow or whatever and make a rope out of it. Tie one end of the rope to the leg of the person suffering from this night blindness, and the other end of the rope tie to the leg of a dog. Children should go behind him, banging and making noises with pieces of earthenware. The lame rule, and they should say to him the following lachash: Osa kalba achsa tarnagola, the old dog, foolish hen, foolish rooster. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it's a lachash. So they do that. Then the ligbi shev umtsi mishiva bati, then collect seven pieces of raw meat from seven different houses in the neighborhood. Valesvino nialib tsinurda didosha, place it for him. They should place those pieces of meat in the tsinurda didosha, which is the hole in the ground where the hinge of the door swings in that hole. So they should put the pieces of meat in there. The person who's suffering from night blindness should eat these pieces of meat in the garbage heap of the town. After that, they untie the rope of animal hair they was tied with. The name Ruhochi, and they should say the following lachash. Shabridi the Pliny by Plonissa, the blindness of Pliny ben Plonis, Shavkino the Pliny by Plonissa, leave Pliny ben Plonis, Velech Rilakalba Bisa de Ene, and let them go and go make a hole in the pupil of the dog's eye. So in other words, they're saying that the sickness should leave the person and go to the dog instead. The pastors, that was the idea of tying them together in the first place, that there should be some kind of connection between them. One more, the Shabriri di Yamama, if a person has day blindness, Lysi Shiva Sunki Megava de Chevasa, he should take seven Sunki from the insides of there's by the way a few other explanations about that last one, Belechu Lakabu Rabisa De'ene. Rashi says it means they should it should go and pierce the Rashi doesn't say. So one explanation means that it means that you're saying in the Lachash that this sickness should go and pierce the dog's eye. And then there's a few other explanations that that it means they should blow at the pupil of the eye. Or it means they should stab the pupil of the eye, whatever, there's a few different possibilities. Anyway, so here, for day blindness, Lacey Shiva Sunki Megava Dechevza, take 7 Sunki from the insides of animals. It actually says that Sunki means spleens. The Oruch says it just means pieces of lean meat, like we had at the beginning of the Perek, Sunka meaning lean meat. Anyway, Venitvinu Achaspadunna, he should roast them on top of a piece of earthenware that's used by a bloodletter. He, the person suffering from the day blindness, should sit inside the house, and somebody else should sit outside. The name alone, he should say to him, Avira, Havli De'echel. The person outside, the pastor, should say, or the name alone, Avira, the blind person should say to the healthy person, Havli De'echel, give me some of that food to eat. And then the sighted person should answer him, Sav Echel, take and eat. After he eats from the meat, he should break the earthenware vessel. If not, then the day blindness will return for it to him. So by breaking it, in other words, symbolically, like you're breaking the power of the disease to return to him. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more of these remedies.